Hello, and welcome to Why Wars Happened,
a weekly podcast where we talk about what led to war in history. I'm your host, Emily Ross, and today we're going to be discussing the things that led to the American Revolution, with a focus on Virginia this season.
Okay, so where we left off in the last episode was that Bacon and the rebels had been forgiven, and all was well. Bacon and a lot of Bacon's supporters had been elected to the assembly, and changes had been made to a few laws that were designed to get rid of the corruption the people had been complaining about. The assembly had even put together a special group whose only purpose was to hear the complaints of the people in order to address them.
On top of that, Governor Berkeley had promised to give Bacon that official permission to lead an army against the attacking natives.
But the governor delayed giving the actual documents to Bacon. Then the natives began attacking again, and the governor put a stop to the group that was hearing complaints until the issue of the attacking natives could be taken care of. Bacon grew suspicious that Governor Berkeley had no intention of giving him the official papers that gave him permission to lead an army, and so he told the governor that his wife was sick and that he needed to leave. The governor allowed him to leave and only too late realized that it was all a lie. Bacon's wife hadn't been sick, and Bacon's real plan was to slip out of Jamestown and head for Henrico, where the people would once again gather around him as an army. The governor hopped on his horse and rode after him. He ordered men around the town to go out on the rivers and streets and find and stop Bacon. But they were too late. Bacon was gone. When Bacon got to Henrico, the men in the town did gather around him. People from everywhere poured in to volunteer as soldiers in his army. They brought weapons, grit, and iron determination. Families were once again being murdered by the natives, and 8 people had recently been killed. When they learned that the governor had not given him the official documents that would allow them to go out against their attackers, they vowed that if Bacon would lead them to the governor, they would force him to hand the documents over, or they would destroy the entire town. So the army marched to Jamestown, and a showdown happened between Bacon's men and the governor. The governor was forced to give the official documents with the permission the army sought, and the army went off to fight the natives. The governor was filled with rage at Bacon and his men and didn't consider the permission to be legal since it had been forced from him. However, he had no choice but to allow them to go. Almost the entire colony was on Bacon's side, and most of the assembly was on Bacon's side as well. But when 2 of the governor's friends in the assembly wrote a letter to the governor, they wrote it on behalf of some of the people in Gloucester County. The people in the letter complained that Bacon's army had been plundering their farms and stealing their horses, and they were completely helpless to stop them. They asked the governor for his protection, and this the governor used as a perfect excuse to ride off in the throes of joy at the thought of rescuing citizens from his enemy, Bacon, at the people's own request. But when he got there, there were only a handful of people who even knew about the letter. Gloucester County was still largely on Bacon's side. The few people who had complained about Bacon were told that in order to have the governor's protection, he would lead them out in a fight against Bacon. These men had no desire to fight Bacon's army and quickly returned to their homes. The governor then literally passed out in his saddle from exhaustion. When he awoke, he rode off towards the eastern part of Virginia, where the people were mostly in support of the governor. Plus, there was a huge river the rebels would have to cross in order to get to him, and they had no large ships to do it. He would be safe there while he built his own army. On the way there, he tried to recruit volunteers for his army against Bacon, but nobody wanted to join him. In Jamestown, those who supported the governor either fled to the eastern part of Virginia to be with the governor, or stayed and pledged their loyalty to Bacon. This left Bacon as the undisputed ruler of the colony. Now was the question of how Bacon would rule. He wasn't a governor, but he was in charge. Shortly after he gained power over the colony, Bacon asked his friend, John Good, what he should do about the rumors that the King of England was sending 2,000 British soldiers to Virginia to restore order. He asked his friend whether his army of 500 men could defeat the British army of 2,000 men. Bacon thought his own army had a bit of an advantage because they knew the land better than the British who were coming. His friend told him that his army didn't have a chance against the British, and that he should lay down his weapons and again submit his obedience to the assembly and the governor. As history would have it, Bacon did not take this advice. The people were still in danger. He couldn't leave them to be slaughtered. They had to defend themselves. He would even ask Britain's enemy countries for help if he had to. If England tried to block incoming and outgoing ships of supplies to Virginia, enemy nations would surely help the colonists. At least that was the hope if it came to it. Along the way, his two closest advisors helped him. These two men are important to remember because Governor Berkeley developed a particular hatred for them simply because of their influence on Bacon. Bacon had always been a fan of elected government, so one of the first things he did was to order a new election for the assembly. The new assembly would meet later to discuss any issues that needed attention. Next, Bacon set up his headquarters in present-day Williamsburg, Virginia. Then he issued a declaration stating that Governor Berkeley and some of his friends in the assembly were traitors, and he would confiscate their homes and property if they didn't surrender within 4 days. Finally, he turned his attention towards how he would interact with the English government. Virginia was still, after all, under English control. Governor Berkeley had made the king well aware of Bacon's rebellion and treachery. The king was sending 2,000 soldiers to take Bacon down and restore order with, likely, Governor Berkeley in charge again. The men who were fighting by Bacon's side were considered enemies of the king. At this time, the people of Virginia still considered themselves to be English citizens, even the one whose ancestors hadn't come from England. Virginia was part of England, was governed by England, and had been given the special right, along with all other colonies, that it was the same as though the people there stood on English soil itself. The idea of breaking off from England wasn't in the minds of the people. Bacon couldn't ask them to overthrow the king's power or betray the throne in any way. The only thing he could do was to act in a way that would seem as though his army was fighting for the king, not against him. So he gathered his men and took an oath of loyalty to the king in front of all of them. Then he required all of his men to do the same. Next, he called in all of the wealthy planters of Virginia. Most of them showed up, and some had to be dragged in. But when they were all gathered, there were 70 of them standing before Bacon. First, he had them all promise to support his efforts in the war with the natives. Second, he told them that anyone who tried to raise an army against him would be arrested. Everyone agreed to these things, but it was a different story when it came to the third requirement. Third, Bacon asked the wealthy gentlemen to declare that it was out of loyalty to the king for them to resist the king's soldiers when they arrived. The idea was that they would resist the British soldiers only until Bacon could plead his case to the king, and then, hopefully, surely, the king would see that Bacon was acting in the best interests of Virginia, and therefore the best interests of the king. The gentlemen flew into heated arguments about this last demand and ultimately refused to agree to it. Normally, that would be the end of it. The gentlemen weren't used to being forced to do anything. But Bacon locked the doors to the meeting room and forced them to agree to all three requirements. To keep up the appearance of allegiance to the king, all of Bacon's orders were issued in the king's name. With the election still underway, and the matter of how to deal with the incoming British troops having been settled, Bacon turned his attention once again to the governor. He also put his attention on the ongoing attacks from the natives. He ordered a large group of men to patrol the rivers and edges of some of the towns to try and prevent native attacks, and to capture the governor if anyone saw him. The orders were to keep the governor alive and return him to England, where he could face trial for his corruption and treason against the people, for not protecting them and allowing them to be butchered. The other part of Bacon's army marched west towards Henrico to go out against the natives. Henrico was about a full day's march if you didn't stop along the way. The assembly was set to meet soon. It often took days for the assembly members to reach Jamestown from their faraway homes, and now it was possible that Bacon wouldn't be there when they gathered. But the attacks from the natives were the most pressing issue for the people, and Bacon was determined to defeat them, even if it meant missing the assembly meeting. Okay, so back to the men who were patrolling the rivers and towns. They were to stop the native attacks and capture the governor if possible. Well, they were busy having their own adventures. Here is a tale of piracy, betrayal, and executions. In the James River, there were two large ships that belonged to merchants. One day, a few of Bacon's men rowed out to one of the ships, fired on her, and captured her. Once aboard, the rebels forced the ship's captain and crew to join their army and fight against the governor. Then they anchored the ships off the shore of Jamestown and raided the guns from the town's forts. They then added those guns to the ship. The rebels demanded permission to board the other ship to search for the governor inside. But the captain refused, raised his anchor, and sailed out of there before the rebels could fire on him. The rebels now had a ship. Even though one of the ships had gotten away, this one was all they needed. Together with the large ship, they added several smaller boats and placed 250 men at the opening of the James River, ready to capture any ships that came their way. After a while, they sailed to the eastern part of Virginia where the governor was hiding and building his own army. They anchored off the coast and decided on a plan. One of the rebels who was leading the army while Bacon was away would go ashore and meet with the governor under a flag of truce. He took 160 men with him for protection. Some of the men had stayed in Jamestown, so now only 40 of Bacon's men were left behind on the ship. When the leader arrived at Berkeley's headquarters, the governor tried to convince him to leave the rebel army and join his side, but the man refused. There was not much more to say after this, and neither side was willing to surrender. Berkeley ordered him and his men to be gone within 8 hours or a battle would ensue. In a twist of fate, strong winds began to blow that night, and the leader was unable to leave for the ship. So, while the ship sat, waiting for the leader to return, a secret message came from the imprisoned captain on the ship. The message was meant for Governor Berkeley. In the message, he told the governor that they had all been captured and forced to serve the rebels, and that if the governor would send another 40 men to help, they would join them and overthrow the rebels. The governor jumped on this immediately. He secretly sent 26 of his own men to the ship to help the crew recapture her. While this was going on, he chatted further with the leader who had come to meet with him. The governor gave him wine and participated in negotiations as though he had intentions of reaching an agreement. When the governor's men rowed out to the ship, the rebels thought their leader had been successful and that the governor's men had been invited to the ship to talk with them. So, the governor's men easily boarded without being fired on. Once on board, one of them ran up to the rebel who had been left in charge of the ship. He pressed a pistol to the rebel's chest and declared that he was now his prisoner. The rest of the governor's men pulled their swords and pistols and waved them at the surprised rebels. The rebels were unprepared, and some of them were even unarmed. They had no hope of winning a fight, and so the rebels surrendered to the governor's men. Shortly after this, the man who had been meeting with the governor finally returned to the ship. When he boarded, he was dumbfounded to see what had happened. He flew into a rage and tore at his clothes and his hair. He called the other rebel leader a coward and accused him of betraying all of the rebellion's plans. He wasn't wrong. Who knows what would have happened had the rebels fired on the governor's men as they approached. The rebels had no way of knowing that the governor's men came to fight and not to talk. But the rebel leader had a reason to be furious. Shortly after this, he was tried, condemned, and hanged. The governor was now regaining control. Now he made another move that got him closer to regaining the entire colony. Together with the army he had built while he was hiding, his new ship, and the volunteers who flocked to join him, he sailed back to the mainland of Virginia and headed towards Jamestown. The governor now had an army of several hundred men, a good match for Bacon's several hundred rebels. And while the rebels had boats, the governor had a ship. And the rebels had gone to the trouble of adding several large guns from the forts onto that ship. So, as the governor and his men arrived in Jamestown, Bacon was still gone on his mission to defeat the natives. There were rebels in Jamestown, but not enough to fight the governor's men. When the people of Jamestown saw the sails of the ship and learned that it was the governor, not Bacon, who was approaching, the town descended into chaos. It had been right around the time that the newly elected assembly was supposed to meet. In fact, it seems to have taken place 4 days after the assembly meeting was supposed to start. So, it was likely that assembly members were there, panicking over having met at the call of Bacon and not at the call of the governor. The governor sent word ashore that he would pardon anyone who would lay down their weapons and pledge loyalty to him. The only people who would not be pardoned were Bacon's two close advisers. But the rebels didn't trust him very much and had all fled Jamestown by the end of the night. Shortly after this, Bacon and his army returned from their mission. They had defeated the natives, and many of the men had returned home. When he heard the news that Governor Berkeley was back in charge and had control over Jamestown, he looked out at his army, now only half of what it was, around 150 soldiers. But the outcome of a fight wasn't certain. Even if the governor's army were double, perhaps triple the size of his own, the small rebel army was well experienced, and as they returned, the people poured around them with offers of food and blessings. Even the women volunteered to help if there were not enough men to fight the governor. Bacon knew that he still held the hearts of the people while the governor was loaded with their curses. On top of that, the governor's men were widely regarded as cowards, and nobody believed that they would actually stand to fight Bacon's men. So, with his half-remaining army, Bacon set course for Jamestown. Along the way, men joined or rejoined him and built up his army again to 300 men. Within a week of Berkeley retaking Jamestown, Bacon and his army were at his door. When he got there, he found that the governor's army had increased to 1,000 men. There were three of the governor's men for every one of Bacon's men. But Bacon's men had experience, determination, and were fighting for their very lives. Plus, Bacon had a plan that would blow the minds of the men on the governor's side. That's all for today. Thanks for tuning in. Join us next week when we discuss the battle between the governor's army and Bacon's army and how it all ended in the burning of Jamestown. See you next time on Why Wars Happened.